throw. Has time.
Over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513. That's the phone number to join the conversation, or you can hit us up on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. The Giants, of course, in the midst of their offseason changes, not a surprise, coming off a 7-9 season and a very, very poor performance by Big Blue over the course of this 2013 season, especially offensively. And that's where we have seen the changes. The Giants bringing their new offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, a couple of days ago to replace the retired Kevin Gilbride. He'll bring that Mike McCarthy Packers system with him to join along with what the Giants already do here under head coach Tom Coughlin. So that's the one change. And the other two changes that were made yesterday, the Giants announced that they have let go both running backs coach Gerald Ingram and tight ends coach Michael Pope, two coaches that have been with head coach Tom Coughlin for a very, very long time. Coach Ingram goes back to his days at Boston College in the early 90s. Then he was with him as well in Jacksonville. And then, of course, you have Mike Pope, who coached with Tom Coughlin when he was here with the Giants in the 80s for those Super Bowl championship teams. So certainly two coaches that Tom Coughlin has a great affinity for, that he likes his men, likes his football people. But when you have a season like the Giants did last year, when the team did not play well and the offense was broken, as I quote Giants owner, president, and CEO John Mara, not to mention the fact that two of the positions of weakness on offense, granted there were others as well, were running back, where the Giants really couldn't get anybody in there consistently and get a consistent running game going. Now, granted, they had a ton of injuries, so I'm not sure Coach Ingram could have prevented that, though a lot of the running backs did have trouble holding onto the football, and at tight end, Brandon Myers caught some passes but not much of a blocker, and obviously that position in flux as well. Coach Coughlin and the Giants front office thought it was best to make some changes at those positions and throw into the fact that Ben McAdoo is probably going to want to bring in some of his own guys to try to teach this system to the Giants players and to the Giants quarterbacks and players. So that, I'm sure, is part of this equation as well. Not sure if the Giants are done. We'll see if any other shifts or changes are made in the next few days. I'm thinking that if they were going to let go more than those two assistants, it probably would have been done at the same time. But we'll have to wait and find out to see if anything else does, in fact, go on with the rest of the offensive assistants. But certainly the Giants moving on, and we could talk about that, free agency. Anything else you want to discuss on Giants.com is fair game. 201-939-4513 or hashtag GiantsChat on Twitter. Let's go to our phones early, and we'll get to them often throughout the entire program, and start with Carlton up in Harlem. Carlton, what's going on?
Yeah, how you doing, John? Good morning.
What's up, man?
Good. I want to make 2 points. First of all, it was a great hire for the Green Bay quarterback coach, Bob McAdoo. It's going to bring, you know, some excitement here back in New York next year. The second point, I want to just put a couple of positions and free agents the Giants should go after. And I think guarantee we can get to the Super Bowl next year.
What do you got?
Okay?
Yeah, go for it.
All right. At running back, I think we should take a first look at Ben Tate. And then have a backup option, James Starks, because he knows the offense from Green Bay. A wild card is, he's injury prone, but it's Darren McFadden. He still has tremendous talent. All right, then at receiver, I know it's a gamble. You talked about him yesterday. But I think he's going to have something to prove to be a number one receiver. It's Kenny Britt. He's bigger, faster than Knicks. If that don't work out, I would probably try to draft Sammy Watkins from Clemson.
I'm not sure Sammy Watkins is going to be on the board when the Giants pick. I think Mel Kiper had him going fifth or sixth in his first mock draft he released yesterday. And in terms of a couple of other guys, and I'll let you finish, Carlton, but mm-hmm. I think Kenny Britt is a big risk. I mean, he's one more mistake away from probably, what, a 8-game suspension by the NFL? I think he was up to 4 mm-hmm. or 6 in his last one. So the only way you bring a guy like that in is if you bring him at a low cost and then you back him up with another player. And I wouldn't touch McFadden with a 10-foot pole. That guy's never healthy. I would not trust him. Ben Tate, I like the idea. We'll see how much he's going to cost. But mm-hmm. I think you're on the right track in terms of targeting the right positions.
All right. Tight end, I think this fits perfectly in the Giants, and he fits the Giants mold. It's Scott Chandler from Buffalo. He can block, and he can catch, and he's 6'6", 270.
I like that one.
My backup would be Fred Davis from the Redskins, talented injured sometimes, and maybe Dennis Pitta, but depending on what Baltimore do. If they don't think that, you know, they can get anybody in free agency, by drafting a tight end, by getting into free agency, I would draft probably Eric Ebron from North Carolina. I don't know how McAdoo's going to go on that route. As far as the offensive line, there's two options they can go. They can leave Beattie at left tackle, leave Pugh at right tackle, and then try to sign the guard from Kansas City, John Osemakh. Then draft Travis Swanson from Arkansas in the second round and re-sign Kevin Bull. Or they can go, the second option would be sign this guy from Kansas City named Brandon Albert and move Beattie to right tackle, then put Pugh at right guard, draft Travis Swanson, and or re-sign Kevin Booth or sign Willie Colon. That's as far as the offense. Defense, I only think there's really two holes. That's it.
What
cornerback and outside, cornerback and outside linebacker. There's four cornerbacks I think the Giants should pair with the Prince. That's the guy from New England. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Khalil, something like that.
Aqib Talib you're talking about?
Yeah, yes, that guy. Brent Grimes, Dominique Cromartie, and Vontae Davis.
Well, Jay, I called it. I'm sorry. I love your enthusiasm, and I love your ambition here, but unfortunately, I don't think the salary cap will allow the Giants to make the number of moves that you're talking about. Unfortunately, I don't think they'll be able to fit all these top-notch players, you know, into their plan. I think they can fit one or two, and then they'll have to fill in the rest with either draft picks or lower-ranked free agents. I just don't think they're going to have the money to bring in all those guys, not to mention the fact they're going to have to decide if they're going to bring back Tuck, Linval Joseph, John Beeson, and guys like that. So I'm not sure they can make all these moves you're talking about. I think they're going to have to pick and choose a couple priorities, target a couple big-time players with those. I think offensive line is going to be one of them, and then you're going to have to figure out the rest as you go.
Do you think, like, guys like Scott Chandler, I don't think, like, Scott Chandler is going to be too expensive.
Oh, no, I agree, and that's why I think I think Scott Chandler was probably the best guy you mentioned, because I think he's a guy you can get at a low cost, and he can fill a need.
Mm-hmm. You think Kenny Britt can be like what Plexico did? Because when Plexico first came here, he was a question mark and unproven in Pittsburgh. Very erratic, had off-field problems, and they were like, all right, you know, we don't know if Plexico could fit in with New York. He came in, got us a Super Bowl ring. You don't think Kenny Britt would do the same thing?
I think Kenny Britt has the physical attributes to be that type of receiver. Here's the issue with Kenny Britt. He gets into trouble, and if you bring him to the Giants, remember, he went to school at Rutgers. So you're, in effect, not changing his scenery. You're bringing him back to a scenery that maybe started him on the wrong path anyway. So I'm not sure that's the best fit. Is he the most physically talented wide receiver that's going to be a free agent this year? Yes. But he is such a disaster off the field. It would be a very high-risk move.
All right, and I got one more point. What do you think about Brandon Spikes for outside linebacker from New England?
Well, Spikes played inside in New England. I'm not sure he has the speed to play outside linebacker. One of the issues he had in New England is that they had to take him out on passing downs because he's very much a downhill, between-the-tackles type of middle linebacker, and he doesn't necessarily have the speed, I don't think, to play outside linebacker in the league.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Hey, thanks for calling in, Carlton. I appreciate it. I like that, though. Carlton went through a list of guys, came in with a plan, knew exactly what he wanted. Again, I think the salary cap will prohibit doing everything he talked about, but I think he threw out some names the Giants will certainly look at. Like Ben Tate, for example. Probably the best running back out there, but that's why he's going to be probably out of the Giants' price range at that position. Bringing back David Wilson, we'll see if they bring back Andre Brown. I think a guy like Rashad Jennings is probably a little more realistic, probably be a little bit less money. A guy that Lance Metal loves, LeGarrette Blount, is another guy that you might be able to bring in for a little less money, but could be an effective veteran sharing time with whomever else the Giants have there at that running back spot. Chandler's a good low-cost tight end. I don't think he's going to get a ton of money, but I think he can get the job done as a two-way tight end. Obviously, Jimmy Graham's going to get signed to an exorbitant contract. I'm sure the Saints will take care of him. We'll see what Greg Olsen gets from the Panthers. My guess is that they're going to take care of him as well, and those are probably the two best tight ends on the market. And then he did mention a tight end that's projected to go in the middle of the first round, the kid out of North Carolina, Ebron, I think his name is, if I recall correctly. And that's a guy I'm sure the Giants will look at with that pick, depending on what they do in free agency. I believe they were very close to drafting Eifert this year, to be quite honest with you. I think he was very much on their board with that first pick, but decided to go with more of a need at offensive line, which I understand. And thank goodness, by the way, they did draft Justin Pugh this year. Could you imagine what that offensive line would have looked like without Justin Pugh? And they were, say, depending on David Deal to start a right tackle? What the hell were you going to do a guard? That would have been a mess. I mean, Justin Pugh, as bad as the offensive line was, he saved their bacon by being ready to play this year. If he wasn't, they were deep, you know what, big trouble. 201-939-4513. Let's go down to Atlanta, say what's up to Jay. Jay, good morning. Jay, you there, pal? Jay, put Jay back on hold. We'll check back with him in a second. Let's go to Tim in Jackson, New Jersey. Tim, what's up?
Hi, I got a question. Got the Giants a free agent plan. They need a sign. But the Giants look to sign Nick Folk, Jimmy Graham, Ted Ginn Jr., Brett Grimes, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, and Brandon Merriweather.
All right.
And Maurice Jones-Drew.
You know, Maurice Jones-Drew, I think, is probably going to want a big payday, and he's, I think, is past his prime. I don't think they're going to look at him. That's number one. Nick Folk, no, I think they're happy with Josh Brown. I think he'll be back here. Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, I think, is probably going to want too much money at corner. My guess, he's going to be one of the higher-paid corners in free agency this year. Brandon Merriweather, I think he's still in the contract with the Redskins, isn't he? But he's like a big-hit safety that gets into trouble. The Giants are already set there with Antrel Will Hill. And then my guess is they'll bring Stevie Brown back on a low-cost contract. So I don't think they'll make a move at safety. I'm trying to think of the other guy that you mentioned. Thanks for the call, Tim. We appreciate it. Brent Grimes, I think, is a guy you can let him go there. Where that is probably a lower-cost corner that I think you can look at. He's a smaller guy, but he's a guy that I think has that giant work ethic. He's a great tackler. He'll attack the line of scrimmage. As a tackler, I think he could play the slot a little bit, considering his size. So I think Grimes could be a guy, depending if Terrell Thomas comes back next year, that the Giants could consider to be a cornerback for them next year. So I think those are some of the names you're talking about, and I think they make some sense. But I think the Giants will have a long look at the rest of the free agents before they decide what they're going to do. By the way, Mike Spofford, who writes for the Green Bay Packers website, will be joining us at 10 a.m. He'll try to give us as much of an explanation of what the Green Bay Packers do and what exactly Ben McAdoo will bring to the table as the Giants' offensive coordinator. So make sure you stay tuned to that. It's going to be a good spot, and I think it'll be pretty informative. And if you want to hit me up at hashtag Giants Chat about any questions you want me to ask him, we can go through that as well. A couple of things that I'm going to talk to him about is pace of the offense, getting out of the huddle quickly, the read and react with the wide receivers, the screen game, a couple other people mentioned stuff yesterday that I'll get to as well, use of the tight end, use of the fullback, the running game, things of that nature. So I'll get to all that with him when he joins us at 10 a.m. right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. For now, back to our busy phones at 201-939-4513. Anthony is out in Phoenix, Arizona. Anthony, you're up early this morning. Good morning.
Yes, good morning, John. How's everything?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Excellent. I just got a couple of questions. What do you think the odds are of us re-signing Roll, Deason, and Puck this year?
Well, Roll's under contract for one more year. My guess is that he's due an exorbitant cap hit this year, something in the area, I think, of $9 million. So they'll probably give him a contract extension and spread that cap hit over a number of years. I think Entrell wants to be here. I know the Giants want him here. So I would expect one of the first orders of business of the Giants this offseason will be to sign Entrell Roll to a contract extension. Now, I think Beeson and Tuck are more interesting cases. I think probably Beeson more than Tuck is looking for a big payday. I think John Beeson, now that he's healthy, he's hitting free agency for the first time, wants to get paid. This is going to be his one time he's going to sign a contract in his prime years, and he's going to want to make it count. So I'm curious to see what type of offers he gets from other teams. Are they going to be scared off by his injury history? And exactly how much the Giants are going to have to pay in order to retain him. At the same time, I think Justin Tuck's somebody that wants to stay here too. And by the way, Beeson wants to be here as well, and the Giants like him. So hopefully that'll work out. I think it's more likely Tuck's back. I think him and the Giants can work out a moderately and reasonably priced contract. I think Tuck wants to retire a Giant. He understands the value in that and everything you get out of it being a big part of the franchise. But the only thing that I think could really stop Tuck from being back is if another team swoops in, offers him a, you know, three-year, $15 million type of contract to try to wrestle him away. I don't think that'll happen considering his advanced age. And remember, he had two or three down years before his monster year in 2013. I think that'll scare teams a little bit. So you put all that together, my guess is that Roll will be extended, Tuck will be back, and Beeson's going to take a little bit longer. But if I had to guess, I think Beeson is back as well.
Okay. My other question is, what do you think about McAdoo? Who is he going to bring in?
In terms of players or coaches?
Coaches.
You know what? I'm not sure of the names. You know, I'm sure he'll see if maybe one of the quality control guys from Mike McCarthy's staff in Green Bay will be willing to come over and take a position coach. I think Tom Coughlin is going to have a lot to do with who he brings in. This is still Tom Coughlin's coaching staff, even though it's McAdoo's the offensive coordinator. I bet you the Giants will still reach out to a couple guys out there, you know, if they want to take a job perhaps underneath that offensive coordinator spot. Like, if Mike Sullivan can't find an offensive coordinator job somewhere, maybe he can come back as a position coach for the Giants and they can shift other guys around.
That's exactly what I was thinking. If he couldn't find work elsewhere, why couldn't he bring him back as a quarterback coach?
Well, then you would have to move Sean Ryan around. So that would be something else. I don't think at this point you would fire Sean Ryan. I don't think that's going to happen. If that was going to happen, it would have happened already. So, I mean, Okay. You could theoretically bring Mike Sullivan back and then perhaps slide Sean Ryan into one of those other spots that are now open at either running backs or tight ends. And remember, Sean Ryan did do a very good job coaching wide receivers for a couple years, including the year the Giants won the Super Bowl. He's the guy that brought Victor Cruz around. He's the guy that, you know, helped him become the player he is. So I think that's a possibility. But remember this too. Mike Sullivan's going to exhaust every single opportunity he has to be an offensive coordinator with another team before he decides to be a quarterbacks coach again.
Okay, thanks, John. Have a nice day.
Hey, you too, Anthony. I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go to a couple tweets we have on Twitter. Juiced O'Real at Grimwad. Monster year is stretching it a bit for Justin Tuck. I don't think so. Double-digit sacks, great against the run. If Tuck's on a winning team, he's a Pro Bowler. The fact that the Giants weren't on a winning team, I think, really hurt him. But to me, Tuck had a Pro Bowl year. And if you have a Pro Bowl year, I don't think that's unfair to call it a monster year, right? I mean, was he in the running for Defensive Player of the Year or something crazy like that? No, but he's on the level just below that, in my opinion. I mean, don't underestimate the job he did against the run. He was an elite run defender, a defensive tackle. Remember, he led the Giants in tackles for a lot of the year. He's a defensive lineman. That's beyond impressive. NF Jintz. What about Graham, the tight end from Houston? He played fullback last year, too. I'd have to look into that. I'm not that familiar with what he does. I'll do some research on that and see what I can get back. Doug Borington, is Ryan Nassib still hurt? How is his progress coming along? Well, Nassib was healthy to end the season. He didn't have any injury issues. Actually, I think, wasn't he on the injury report 1 week? But I think it was an illness or something like that. It wasn't anything serious. So Nassib's fine. I actually saw him in the building the other day. He's been working out, and he's working really hard to try to convince the Giants he can be their backup quarterback next year. And quite honestly, I haven't talked to anybody, but I'd be blown away if the Giants kept three quarterbacks again next season. I think they feel, in to a certain extent, they were burned this year by having to waste a roster spot on the third quarterback. They wasted another roster spot on Adrian Robinson for most of the year, and I think next year Tom Coughlin is going to really want to maximize those roster spots, which is what he's done in the past before this year. And I think they're going to want Ryan Nassib to win that backup quarterback spot. If they don't think he's ready to be a backup quarterback, frankly, he could be cut. I know Giant fans will probably lose their you-know-what if that happens because he was a fourth-round pick and they traded up to get him. But look, second year in the league, fourth-round pick, you got to be ready to be a backup. You have to be. And you can't waste a roster spot on a guy like that. Mike Farmer, Blunt has earned some extra money with his player performance, which isn't over yet. Think he'll be out of our range. Mike, you're right. You know, a lot of times these guys do get paid based on their playoff performance. We've seen it with guys in the past, go all the way back to, you know, Larry Brown with the Dallas Cowboys back in the early 90s, and other players that have been, you know, MVPs in these games. I think Dexter Jackson got a big deal, too, off that Super Bowl performance when he had the couple interceptions against the Raiders in that big Super Bowl blowout. So those are a couple guys you could talk about. Elo H, I would stay away from Kenny Britt. He's got talent, but I doubt the Giants would consider him. Not a Coughlin-type guy. I would tend to agree with that. Now, remember, though, the Giants have been known to take chances on guys, whether it's a guy like Burris. They drafted a guy like Manningham. A guy like Hosley had some issues in college. I think with a guy like Blunt, what they'll do, they'll kick the tires a little bit. They'll talk to him and try to get a feel for the type of guy that he is. I'm sure they also have reports on him from when he was drafted just a few years ago, and they'll go back to those reports. And if they find that those reports show them that he is a problem and his issues go deeper than just wrong place, wrong time, wrong people around them, they won't look at him. But if they think he's a guy that in the right place and in the right system under the right coach, which I think the Giants organization provides all those things, he can be a productive player and a productive member of society and not get in trouble, I think they'll consider it. But no, I agree. I think when, if you take a look at the overall picture of Kenny Britt, not the type of guy that the Giants would bring in. At base 718, people got to stop thinking Reese is playing a game of Madden. We can't sign every big name on the market. That's the point I was making to Carlton. And again, he brought up some guys that weren't huge names. Scott Chandler, not a huge name. I don't think Kenny Britt's getting a big contract. I think you can get him on the cheap. But again, we talked about all the issues with him. Ben Tate, on the other hand, that's a lot of money. Dominic Rogers, Cromartie, that's another a lot of money. Ben Grimes, I think, will probably get a fairly sizable contract. So those are all things you do have to worry about. Add Bone Marrow Brew, you want special teams help? I give you Ty Montgomery from Stanford, Carlos Wiggins from New Mexico, and Solomon Patton from Florida, all fourth to sixth round picks. And look, he's right about that. If you want to improve your special teams, I know people, you know, always go after Tom Quinn. That's fine. But you need the players to do it too. And the Giants let go a couple of guys that were good special teams players but just couldn't do enough on defense. Tyler Sash being one. Greg Jones being another. These are guys that could have been good special teams players, but they were just so far away from contributing on defense that the Giants had to let them go. And it happens. What are you going to do? At NYG Men for Life, that's our boy Victor in Texas. When Nick leaves the Giants via free agency, who will step up at his spot, Randall or Jernigan, or do they draft another wide receiver? You know, that's an interesting question, Victor. I don't think you can start Jernigan and Cruz together. I think they're too similar. You want some guy in there with a little bit of height. I think they'll give Ruben Randall the opportunity to win that starting job in the offseason, but they will not hand it to him. And he needs to show that he's made significant progress in terms of being a reliable wide receiver from this year and last year. Ruben Randall had his own little David Copperfield disappearing act the last six games of this year. Invisible. One of the few guys that were healthy all year, except for that final game. but invisible. And he needs to step up and play better. He'll have every opportunity to do it in the offseason. And the beautiful thing about this Ben McAdoo thing is that in a lot of ways, all these players on offense now are starting on even ground. They're all learning this stuff for the first time. So Victor Cruz will not have an advantage of being here longer. And we'll see which guys are smarter, which guys work harder in the classroom to learn this system, and which guys are smart enough and sharp enough to turn the classroom work into consistent execution on the field. And I think you'll learn a lot about a lot of these players that people want to, you know, to become big parts of this offense, whether it's Adrian Robinson or Reuben Randle or even Drell Jernigan. Remember, folks, it took Drell Jernigan 2.5 years to figure out Kevin Gilbride's system to the point where he could contribute. How long will it take him to figure this system out? And even a veteran like Will Beatty, you talk to some of those veteran offensive linemen that were here, it took him a couple years to learn the blocking schemes in the Giants' current system. If you watch the plays that changed the game this year, Sean O'Hara made a joke on it, and the old joke was that, you know, when Will Beatty first started playing, before the play, you would have to say, Beatty left, Beatty right, because you had to tell him which way to block. Now, he eventually figured it out, and he's a very good offensive lineman now in Gilbride's system until this year, but will take him a little bit longer to learn this system. We'll see. That's something to keep an eye on. Eli Manning's never ran a new system, never had to learn a new system. Now, with his work ethic and his intelligence, I really don't think it's going to be a problem, but I think it's interesting to see how all these guys react to a new system. I really do. By the way, David Wilson had neck surgery. I think it was either yesterday or today. I'm not sure. So that's something to keep an eye on. So we wish him the best. The Giants hope that he will come back and be healthy very soon. Finally, Bob Karpowitz. Firing Mike Pope seems similar to the firing of longtime head coach Steve Owen. I guess it had to be done. Well, you know, comparing a tight ends coach to a head coach, I think, is a stretch. But I think if the Giants thought it was time to move on and get some fresh blood, we'll see who ends up replacing him as their tight ends coach. Let's see. A couple more things as we'll be joined by Mike Spofford from Packers.com in just a second. We're getting up on the line. A couple things. A.J. Marshall, like to see the Giants sign center Alex Mack. Again, I think he'll be a lot of money, A.J., but I do think he's a great fit, and he's one of the guys I would target. ABR, is Jenkins under contract? I assume you mean Cullen. Yes, he is, for two more seasons. NYG Cap Central, Rolls cap number is $9.25 million. Third highest on the team behind Eli and Snead, like I said. That's why they're probably going to extend him and reduce that cap number. Chris Alvarado, if I'm Sullivan, I'll come back as quarterback coach. We'll broaden his knowledge as an offensive coordinator. Chris, that's a great point. And if Mike Sullivan can find an offensive coordinator, that's probably something that he consider. He will learn a new system. And if he has a lot of success as a quarterback and coach in that system, maybe another offensive coordinator job could be found quickly down the road. I think that's certainly possible. So, yeah, if he can't find an offensive coordinator job, I think that's something he'll certainly take a look at. Bone marrow blue, we need an elite cornerback coming out of college. Denard, Michigan State, who would you draft first if drafting a cornerback in the 2014 draft? I got to admit, with all this coaching staff stuff, guys, I haven't done all my draft research yet. Remember, we haven't even gone to the combine yet. So I'm not willing to say who my top corner is quite yet because I haven't even seen the combine. And granted, I probably take the combine less seriously than most. I prefer talking about game stuff. So let's get a little closer to the draft. A lot can change in 3 months. Remember, at this time last year, DeMontre Moore was a first-round pick. Dropped to round three. Mike Farmer called me crazy, but I don't get quite as excited at the thought of Ben Tate as everybody else. I get that. Chris Alvarado, I believe Jernigan can be a Percy Harvin type of player. He even looks like him on the field wearing number 12. Well, Percy Harvin has more size and speed than Drell Jernigan. And quite frankly, it's not close. Percy Harvin's a physical freak. Drell Jernigan's a small, quick, slot wide receiver. So, very different type of players. I know people are excited about Jernigan last two weeks of the year. He played extremely well, but let's not try to turn him into Percy Harvin quite yet. And remember, what he did against Seattle came in the fourth quarter in garbage time. And then he faced the Redskins and faced Josh Wilson, one of the worst cornerbacks in football in the final week of the year. And then against Detroit, obviously, he had a pretty good game as well. And the Lions were trying to win the NFC North still at that time. 201-939-4513. We'll get back to the phones in just a second, but we welcome in our special guest this morning. That's Mike Spofford, right for the Packers on their website, and he's going to give us a little insight on Ben McAdoo. Mike, good morning. Thanks so much for the time. We appreciate it.
Hey, you bet, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, Mike, let's get right into it. Let's start with the type of guy Ben McAdoo is first. What is he going to bring to the Giants with his personality, work ethic, and the way he interacts with players?
Well, I tell you, he's from my experience working with him, he's a no-nonsense, all-business, an extremely detail-oriented guy. There's nothing gets past Ben McAdoo. I mean, he knows everything, you know, inside and out as far as the game plan every week and how to one of the interesting things Aaron Rodgers said after the season ended when Ben was being, you know, talked about for these different jobs he was interviewing for, and he said one thing that Ben did is Ben always made sure that Aaron was, you know, not just prepared but over prepared when it came to knowing the game plan. And I think he'll bring that to the entire offensive staff and to the offensive leaders there. He's extremely detail oriented and he doesn't miss a thing.
No, it sounds like a lot like Tom Coughlin, to be quite honest with you. And that was one of the things Tom said after the hire, that he loved his work ethic. So that's certainly good to hear. Now, I understand, if I read one of the Aaron Rodgers quotes correctly during those interviews you were talking about, Mike, is that he installed the red zone scheme for the Packers when he was there for a couple years. Is that true?
I guess that may have been true. I know that the way Coach McCarthy, you know, delegated things is that all the different offensive coaches had a different piece of the game plan.
Interesting.
In a given week. So, you know, there'd be somebody who had red zone, somebody who had third down, somebody who would have, you know, short yardage and goal line. You know, they divided up the game plan that way, and I don't know specifically what Ben's responsibilities were, and they may have changed from year to year. I don't know if he necessarily did the red zone every year,
right,
that he was here, because I think Mike would shift those things around. But Aaron may have been referring to, you know, this past season, that most recently then, you know, Ben's primary responsibility with the game plan was the red zone. But that's just part of the delegation, the way Coach McCarthy would divide up the game plan assignments.
We're joined by Mike Spofford, writes for Packers.com. Mike, let's talk about the offense, and I'm sure he's going to bring a lot of the principles that Mike McCarthy uses. He's been with them for so long. It's only natural. And we've obviously seen the Packers offense a lot here in New York. The Giants and Packers have played each other a bunch over the last couple of seasons. Would you say would be the primary identifying characteristic of a Mike McCarthy or Ben McAdoo offense?
I think the biggest characteristic is I guess I'll say it this way. To me the biggest characteristic, as far as when you know that the offense is working and the offense is clicking, is when the action passing game is making things happen. I mean, when Aaron Rodgers is at his best is when he's making the play fake and then getting the ball out quickly, because as soon as he makes that play fake, somebody is breaking open. Now, obviously, it takes a running game to be able to do that, and the Packers had more success with that this year than they have in past years. And one of the reasons that they were able to succeed, even in the years that they didn't necessarily have the running game and didn't have as much of the action passing game, was the freedom, I guess you could say, that Aaron Rodgers has at the line of scrimmage, as far as getting the offense into the right play, making the right checks and things like that. The offense has a lot of options, a lot of different choices that can be made at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, certainly a quarterback like Eli Manning, with his level of experience, I think Ben McAdoo will give a quarterback like Eli Manning plenty of responsibility at the line to get the offense into what they like to call here the best possible play.
Now, one thing you mentioned that I want to delve into a little bit deeper, and you talked about getting the ball out quickly, and I really think that's something the Packers have done extremely well. They'll take their shots down the field, but they want 3 steps, 5 steps, stop, ball out of the quarterback's hands, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no better pass protection for your quarterback than having him get rid of the football. The West Coast offense is based on a lot of timing routes, and that timing is developed in you know, during OTAs and during training camp and things like that, where the quarterbacks and the receivers are working time and time again on those three-step drops and the ball's coming out, or the check with me's where everybody believes it's a running play, but the quarterback and the receiver, you know, check to the pass and he just flips it out to the side and the receiver tries to, you know, go one-on-one with a corner, make a guy miss and make a big play. So a lot of it is predicated on getting the ball out quickly when you can, so that, I think, in a lot of ways, so that that action passing game can work, where when you do the play fake and you take the seven-step drop, you maybe have a little bit extra time to get the ball out because you're not doing that too often.
Now, how about the pace of the offense? Should we expect to see a lot of no huddle? And is that a no huddle to move the offense quickly, or is that just to keep a pace? How do the Packers utilize that no huddle as a part of their offense?
Well, the last couple of years, they've certainly utilized it quite a bit. The use of it went down a little bit this past year when Rodgers was injured, of course, but when Aaron Rodgers has been the starting quarterback, they like to use the no huddle. They like to, obviously, you know, the main goal really, or I should say one of the main goals with the no huddle is to try to keep the defense in the same personnel group, not allow the defense the time to substitute, and you get a personnel group that you like the matchups against the defense's personnel group, and you
right.
don't huddle, and you keep getting the quarterback up under center, and he's picking out the matchups that he wants to go after. That's really what the Packers have done a lot and what Aaron Rodgers is very, very good at.
Now, two things the West Coast offense, I know, and the Packers offense does extremely well are running those little incidental, and I'll call them incidental because that's what the offense wants to make them look like, incidental pick plays back there in the secondary to get wide receivers open, and also a lot of screen passes. Are those two things you think McAdoo will bring over to the Giants?
I would think so. I mean, the Packers, I would say the Packers started to get back to their screen game a little bit more this year with Eddie Lacy, and they hadn't had too much of it in the previous couple years. And, you know, I guess that's just a reflection of, the philosophy around here is to utilize your offensive personnel the best. If Ben McAdoo may love the screenplay, but when he gets things going, if he doesn't feel like he has the right linemen or the right running backs or whatever the case might be to execute it, then he's going to look for other things to use that he feels those guys are going to do best. It's all about utilizing personnel. It's not about coming in hard-headed with this is what we're going to do and this is how we're going to do it. It really is about learning the personnel. And I think given time, Ben will learn the personnel. And you know, he's got a great start, obviously, with a veteran quarterback like Manning, who's won a couple of championships and has seen everything already. It's not like his job is to develop a quarterback. He just needs to develop an offense, and he's got a great quarterback to build around.
Okay, a couple more questions for Mike Spofford from Packers.com. Mike, one thing I know Giant fans have been a little bit frustrated with the last couple of years under Kevin Gilbride is the Giants' read-and-react system, where the quarterback and wide receiver have multiple options on their routes. They have to see the same thing, then execute it in order to make the play. The result has been more miscommunications and, you know, mistimed routes than I think Giant fans would like. How much in Mike McCarthy's system do they utilize that receiver and quarterback both reading the corner and having to see the same thing? Or is it more of a system where it's based on timing, the wide receiver's route is fixed, and the quarterback just has to read who's going to be open on that given play?
My experience is there's plenty of that read and react with the wide receiver, you know, adjusting his route based on the coverage. And, you know, the wide receiver may have essentially two options as far as what his route is based on the coverage that he sees. And you know, I mean, miscommunications, on those are going to happen all the time. They,
right.
they do happen with Aaron Rodgers and Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson, you know, occasionally as well. But you know, what I noticed here is where those things get ironed out the most is in the film room. And, you know, it's the quarterbacks watching film with the wide receivers. It's
right.
it's the entire offensive group watching the film together, not just everybody staying in their own little position groups to watch film. And that's one of the things that that I think really has been a big help to the offense here is the different positions in the offense. You know, even the running backs and the offensive linemen watching film together as far as the run game and the blocking fits and things like that. So that's something that I think has to get ironed out in the film room, and it'll take some time, but Ben certainly knows how to get that to work.
You mentioned the running game. Are we going to see a lot of stretch zone principles? Is it more a man-to-man blocking scheme? How does he utilize the running backs?
Well, the Packers, really this past year with Eddie Lacy coming on board as the primary running back, they really got away from, I guess you could say, being primarily a zone running team, and they really mixed a lot of zone runs with pattern runs and pulling guards and things like that. It really became a big mixture. And
wow.
So early when Mike McCarthy first got here in 2006, he brought the zone scheme, and they were almost strictly zone scheme as far as running. And it's not like that anymore. It's a completely different running game. And again, I'll go back to just saying, and I don't mean to say this as a cop out, but it's going to be based on the personnel. I mean, if you feel that, say your guards are better at pulling than they are running zone, then you design the pattern runs and,
right.
and run behind that, and also what the zone running versus pattern running, a lot of it depends on, the vision of the running back and what the running back is comfortable with. There are some running backs who really struggle to adjust to a zone scheme if they've always been running behind pulling guards and pulling tackles and things like that. So it's going to be a matter of learning the personnel. But Ben McAdoo, I think, is coming there with experience in running all sorts of different variations of offense, and I think he's going to take the approach of find out what these guys do best, and then let's perfect it.
We're joined by Mike Spofford from Packers.com. Just a couple more questions, Mike. You mentioned unique personnel, and I think John Kuhn certainly fits into that list in terms of what he can bring as a fullback. I know they use him in pass protection a lot. They use him as a wide receiver. They use him, at least they have in years past, as a short yardage running back. Do the Packers, in their running game, use a lot of fullback as the lead blocker, or do they use primarily two tight ends when they try to get their running game going with Eddie Lacy?
They've used both, and there were times this year they went back and forth between the two tight ends and single setback, and then having Kuhn as the lead fullback. That's one of the things about a Mike McCarthy offense is the number of different personnel groups that are used within a given game, even within a given quarter of a football game on a couple of different series. You'll just see so many different personnel groups, and he's always trying to get the defense to adjust. And as I said, and then when they want to go with the no huddle, they find a personnel group, with a matchup they like, and then they try to stick with that. So the Packers certainly used John Kuhn as a lead blocker, but they also pulled him off the field plenty of times and would load up two tight ends, even sometimes putting two tight ends in the backfield as sort of like an inverted wishbone, full house backfield, and run Eddie Lacy behind that, or even run play action off of that and slip one of those tight ends out into the flat. Something that looks like a pure, run formation ends up being a play action pass. So Ben McAdoo is I'm sure going to incorporate a lot of variety in what the Giants are going to do.
And how about in terms of the tight ends? Will they almost assign one tight end to be their quote unquote receiving tight end, like a JerMichael Finley, and then have a guy like Crabtree be your quote unquote blocking tight end, or do they prefer to have two-way guys that they can trust to do both on any given play?
I think any offensive coach would prefer to have the two-way guys,
right.
but if you have a guy who's clearly a more of a stretch the field, stretch the seam receiver, and not as good a blocker, then you find that role for him. And if you have another tight end whose strength is the blocking, but maybe he's not going to threaten the defense as much down the field, then he has a role too. So I really think it comes down to trying to use use the players for what they do best and not try to make them do things that maybe they're not as comfortable with or that they won't be as successful with.
Yeah, and you say that, and I remember watching the Packers a lot over the last few years, and more often than not, JerMichael Finley seemed to be lined up off the line of scrimmage in the slot. They like to get him manned up on smaller cornerbacks and really use him like a wide receiver.
Yeah, they did that a lot with Finley. He became a second slot receiver, you know, along with Randall Cobb in this offense. Finley could be an inline tight end and release off of that spot and go into a pass route, or he could stand up, you know, off the line of scrimmage and run a route from the slot. They certainly did that plenty with him, probably more so than any other tight end that they've had in this offense.
Final question, and we're joined by Mike Spoffer from Packers.com. We thank him a lot for his time. And, Mike, my final question is simply this. Ben McAdoo has, meteoric rise perhaps might be a little strong, but he's rose quickly through the ranks here just by working with him, dealing with him. Do you believe he was ready and is ready to be an offensive coordinator in the NFL?
I think he definitely is, and I think one of the things that speaks to that is and it's not just with Ben, it's with some of the other coaches here. Mike McCarthy has a track record for really cross-training his offensive coaches, and when you look at what Ben McAdoo has done in his career in the NFL, he started as a quality control offensive assistant, just like Mike McCarthy did in Kansas City in the early 90s. Then he moved up to being a position coach with the tight ends. Then after Aaron Rodgers wins the MVP in 2011, then Ben McAdoo becomes the quarterback's coach, which I think speaks to the trust that Mike McCarthy has. You don't just make pick anybody to be the league MVP's position coach, coming off of that award. So you're talking about a guy who's worked at various levels of the offense, and various positions in the offense, and a guy who's got that much experience with that many different positions. The next step is to be a coordinator. There isn't that much left for Ben McAdoo to do, and he certainly would have been in line to be the next offensive coordinator here, except Tom Clements isn't going anywhere anytime soon. So Ben took the opportunity to get some interviews and move up in the world. Was he ready to be a head coach? I know, he had interviewed for the head coaching job in Cleveland. That would have been, as you say, maybe a meteoric rise, a pretty big leap to go from being a position coach to a head coach without being a coordinator. But this is definitely the next step for him. And I know Mike McCarthy believes that Ben McAdoo's on track to be a head coach in the NFL someday.
Mike, absolutely invaluable information. Great stuff. Thank you very much for the time. We appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
That's Mike Spofford from Packers.com giving us some absolutely fantastic information on Ben McAdoo. And I think you learned a lot from that. And I think a couple things that he pointed out that should stick with you if you're a Giants fan is multiple personnel groups, try to find mismatches with the defense. He will try to play to his player's strength and use guys based on what they're good at and not try to pigeonhole them into a role. And I think the last thing that I have to bring up, which I'm sure Giant fans were excited about and psyched about, is that you will see a lot of read and react with the wide receiver and the quarterback having to read the defensive backs a certain way, which I know Giant fans were hoping they would move away from, but it looks like Ben McAdoo does use a lot of that in his scheme. And we talked about that yesterday, how much the Packers use their back shoulder throws. That was something Pro Football Focus tweeted out, and I think it's a very interesting thing when you take a look at that maybe the offense will be as much different as people think. 201-939-4513. Let's get to your phone calls to close out this show and start with Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Good, John. Good. That was indeed a very good interview. And what's going to stick with me after the 10 or 15 minute dialogue that you had with that gentleman is the idea that McAdoo is not going to do the square peg into a round hole thing.
Right.
And that he's going to play to the player's strength and use them to the best of their ability. And that to me is the most refreshing thing. If I had had one opportunity to ask him a question, John.
You mean I didn't ask every question that you wanted me to ask, Len? I'm insulted.
There you go. I just have one, and I think you maybe can answer the question
sure
as well as he could. it will be interesting to see how McAdoo views the role of the quarterback coach and whether or not we will even see a quarterback coach. No, I mean, obviously the quarterback coach in Green Bay had much more input into the game plan than the quarterback coach probably had with the New York Football Giants last year. And it'll be interesting to see how McAdoo handles that, whether he believes, even if without the title, he's the quasi-quarterback coach.
Yeah, Len, you know what? I think you have to have one, and here's why. Now, what his role is going to be, I think, is a better question. And I don't have the answer to that. I think we'll see what he'll do when he'll get here. And maybe he'll do what Mike McCarthy does and kind of spread out different parts of the game plan to different coaches. I think that should be pretty interesting. But you have to have a quarterback's coach just because when you're in practice and the groups get split up, you have wide receivers in one place, corners in another, offensive line, defensive line. You have to have somebody with the quarterbacks to run their drills. And the offensive coordinator is going to be walking around from group to group at that point. So you have to have a quarterbacks coach. What he exactly is going to be doing, I think that's a better question that I don't think anybody has the answer to yet.
Well, I just thought it will be interesting to see how he does that. Listen, kudos to Tim from Jackson, New Jersey. He threw out a name that you didn't have time to talk about, that I wouldn't mind seeing on the New York Football Giants. And he's going to be a low-cost guy, although he's not in his first, second, or third year. He's more in that 4, 5 to 6 year point. And that is Ted Ginn Jr. And, John, if there's one person I don't want to see performing the same role with the Giants next year that they did this past year, it's Reuben Randall as a punt returner. Please, John, if you have any pull, please. You know, Reuben's a wide receiver. I'm looking forward to seeing him do great things with the Giants. This guy is just not a punt returner.
Hey, Len, I agree. And frankly, I think Ted Ginn would be a great addition.
He's
a guy that doesn't fumble the football. He knows how to catch punts. He knows how to catch kicks. He can be your third or fourth wide receiver that can stretch the field. He's not going to kill you in those spots. To me, and you know what? That's a bad job out of me because that's one of the names Tim brought up that I forgot to comment on. I think Ted Ginn would be a fantastic fit to bring in next year to play that role for the Giants.
Now, we're going to see him this weekend, and the one thing that I have always liked about Ginn in returning kicks, and as a pass receiver, he's done some things, but he's obviously not a 1, 2, or 3 like you're talking about. He's a 4, and if you've got a deep like Seattle, he's probably a 5. But I tell you, his explosion on kickoff returns. Now, I know kickoff returns have become somewhat a thing of the past, but, boy, I love his acceleration on kickoff returns, and I tell you, when he accelerates fully, he gets the full speed quickly, and he can indeed explode down the field. I think that's somebody to look at. Kudos to Tim for throwing that name out there.
I agree. Len, I appreciate the call, bud.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Talk to you again real soon. By the way, another wide receiver at Bone Marrow Blue brought up, and I brought up this name yesterday, and I forgot to bring it up today. Emmanuel Sanders could be a sleeper free agent wide receiver, can play all three positions, is explosive. Now, I'm not sure how much money he's going to get. Will the Steelers really try to retain him to match him with Antonio Brown to try to keep those guys in that system? I'm not sure about that. But I think Sanders is a guy the Giants will look at. He is a pretty good wide receiver. I agree with that. I think that's a very good name to throw out there. As a guy maybe on the lower cost. You know, you'd give him a couple million a year, but you wouldn't have to really break the bank for him. And again, don't be shocked if James Jones gets mentioned too, considering his experience in McAdoo's system in Green Bay. 201-939-4513. Mike has been holding patiently in New York. Mike, good morning.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Good morning. What's up, Mike?
I just wanted to turn tides for a minute. Before I'm on the defense, you know, I understand, you know, the offense needs a lot. But, you know, you go to free agency, grab yourself a top tackle, you know, and then pick up throw another wide receiver and running back in there. I think they have a lot of the pieces in place. But for me, you know, watching the Giants, I know the defense came around, but I think it's imperative that they re-sign John Beeson. And I also think this has got to be the year. There are two guys out there in the draft. You got the kid from Buffalo, Mac, and you got the kid from UCLA, Barr. They have to re-sign Beeson and add another linebacker there and get back to where we used to be, John. The linebacker U, they called us. We got to get those. We got to get back to playing. You know, get the speed at linebacker. You look at Seattle. You look at the Niners. You know, all the top defenses got great linebacker play. We got to get back to that. And I think, in addition, we probably need to find ourselves another cornerback on the other side. You know, and you know, it'll give a chance for, you know, you could play more man to man. You know, and then have the safeties, you know, come back and help a lot more.
I agree. Look, I think that's true. I think you got to bring Beeson back, and then your work at linebacker is not done. I think you need to bring in somebody else. Now, do I think the Giants, based on their history, will use a first-round pick on a linebacker if they bring back Beeson? Unfortunately, Mike, I don't think they will. However, in my opinion, you have to continue to build that linebacker core up because you saw how much different the team was once they had a leader and a guy that could play in the middle of that defense. And I think if you had another playmaking linebacker, I think it could make all the difference. So I don't necessarily disagree with you. I think you're on the right track. It's just a matter of finding the resources to address that. Resign Tuck. You know, consider bringing back Joseph. Make a move at corner. Like you said, you have to bring in a cornerback. They have to figure out where their resources are best spent, but I do believe they need to add Beeson and then add another linebacker on top of that.
So do you think if either Mack or Barr was available, you don't think that they would use that first-round pick to take either one of those two guys, as good as they were in college?
I think if Mack falls to them, I think they'll consider it. I haven't done as much work on Barr quite yet. I know Mack is projected to go in the top 8 or 9 from what I've seen in a lot of the mock drafts. Now, he would be a guy converting from a 3-4 linebacker to a 4-3 linebacker, too. So that's something you have to worry about.
Right.
I think they look at him. Do I think that position would be considered their top need on draft day? Probably not. But remember, folks, and this is important to note, we have all a free agency to go through before we know who the Giants are going to draft. So what if the Giants bring in, you know, Beeson and then another top-flight linebacker in free agency? Then they're not going to look at a guy like Mack in the first round. So I think we have to wait to see what the Giants do in free agency before we talk about who they're going to draft. All right, Mike?
All right, thanks.
I appreciate
John.
The call,
great show.
Man. Hey, good stuff. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. But, yeah, I think you need Beeson plus one, no doubt. But I think you need a corner, too. I really do, folks. I think you really need to bring in a cornerback here to play across from Prince. 201-939-4513. John is all the way out in London. Johnny, what's up, buddy?
Hey, John, how you doing?
How are you?
Very well indeed, and you?
I'm doing fantastic, John. What's going on?
Yeah, just a couple of questions, actually.
Sure.
Great show, always listening in. Great to hear the other fan insight. I'm really excited about the hiring of Mr. McAdoo, and I really hope he fits in well. But just a couple of concerns. I'd love to get your thoughts on them.
Sure.
Don't want to start on a negative or anything, but just kind of about the internal politics, really. I think that Mr. McAdoo's going to bring a kind of a fresh playing style for the Giants. But my worry is that implementing a kind of fundamental change in the Giants' offense would make sense to me if the new man implementing the change were the head coach. But as Ben McAdoo is still going to have to kind of play second fiddle to Coach Coughlin, he's going to kind of have to still play under a more conservative style, what I'm thinking. I'm just wondering how you see that working. Is there a chance that the master, Coach Coughlin, may have to learn from the pupil? Because I'm pretty sure that's not Coach Coughlin's style.
Now, here's what I think. I think they already convinced Coach to bring in a new guy like McAdoo as their offensive coordinator. I think Coach will give him a certain amount of freedom here to install a lot of new tenants into the system. Now, I think certain things are going to stick. Like, you're going to see balance. You're going to want to run the football. You're going to want to pass it. That's a tenant of Coach Coughlin's system. You're going to want a power running game. That's a tenant of Coach Coughlin's system. And you are going to try to throw the ball down the field a little bit. I think the big play will stay a part of what the Giants do, which is fine. The Packers threw down the field plenty to guys like James Jones and Jordy Nelson. So I think Tom will manage what McAdoo does, but at the same time, considering how bad the offense was last year, I think McAdoo will be given a fair amount of freedom to implement the system that he wants to implement.
Right. I mean, my worry is that he seems to have a pretty good pedigree, but he's fairly ambitious and fairly career-focused. So I'm just kind of worried that there's a danger he may get frustrated having to knuckle under what he might consider a kind of old-fashioned, more backward-looking system. But, I hope you're right, and I really wish him all the best, and hope you're welcoming when he arrives.
Will do. John, we appreciate all our fans overseas. I know the Giants have a very large contingent of fans out there in London, in the United Kingdom. We appreciate the call. You got anything else for me?
Actually, I used to live in New York, so kind of a New York exile, I like to think of myself as. But, just one last thing. Very sad to see Mike Pope go. I'm sure that we're going to hear something more positive out of the Giants about, all he's done for the team. 4 championships. Just like to take the opportunity to say thanks a lot for all of them and wish them all the best.
John, we appreciate the call, man. Thanks for calling in. Hope to hear from you. You can always hit us on Twitter as well. I know these calls are not cheap. Thank you.
That's all right. All the best.
Have a good one, man. John, cheers. Appreciate the call. Excellent stuff. I got my English accent, by the way. I know that you guys are thinking on Twitter. You can tease me all you want. That's fine. Love to hear from our fans overseas. They do a great job. We have a big contingent out there in London. I should have asked me, you went to see the Brooklyn Nets play basketball. Is that game tonight or was it yesterday, the Nets game in London? I'm not sure. But they were asking a bunch of, like, the man on the street interviews, oh, how about the Nets playing basketball here? There's an NBA game here? Nobody had any idea what was going on. Certainly not as big of a deal as the NFL playing games out there. But, John, thanks for the call. Love to hear from you. Good stuff. And, look, I think McAdoo will be given the freedom to install his system and do what needs to be done on offense to move this offense forward, make some changes. And really, look, the Packer system works. We've seen it. The West Coast offense has worked in this league forever. And obviously this is Mike McCarthy's twist on the West Coast offense, but a lot of the tenets are still the same. 201-939-4513. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Charles in North Carolina first. Charles, what's going on?
Hey, I said last week that I would love McAdoo to come coach this offense, and I got my wish. You just said it. You pretty much covered everything I was going to say about McAdoo. The running shoot hasn't worked in this league all the time, and we got a whiff of it this season. The West Coast has. So, you pretty much said everything I was going to say, John. But anyway, let me go to free agency and the draft.
What can I say, Charles? Back. Great minds think alike, my friend.
Hey, you took the words right out of my mouth, man. So, but we got to sign Beason. I think a couple of callers before, or maybe 2 or 3 calls before, has said we got to sign Beason, which is right. And then I don't think Mac or Barr would be around. Looking at the mocks, and that's what I do, man. Once our season's over, I get into that mock stuff. I don't know if those two guys are going to even be around at 12. I tell you what, I think C.J. Mosley will be a good fit at linebacker for us. But I think I would like to see the Giants go after a cornerback in free agency. Other than, I can't think of it, I don't know if it's his first name or last, Denard. He's a cornerback that's in the draft that I think if he falls to us, we probably can't pass him up. It's probably one of those situations like Prince where, you're not expecting this guy to fall, and he does, and you can't pass him up. I think Denard is his name. At cornerback that's coming out of the draft. He's like a top 10 pick.
I'm looking
other
up.
Than him, yeah, other than him, C.J. Mosley at linebacker, like I said, I don't think Barr or Mac will be around. I don't think either one of those guys will fall to us. Outside of C.J. Mosley, if we can't get him, and we don't know what's going to happen in the draft, it's all mock, but, you got to go one of them old tackles, man. It's not a pretty pick. It's not sexy. But you gotta. I love to have. There's gonna be a lot of good top 15 left tackles coming out of this draft, man. And if we can snag one of those guys up, I'll be happy with that. I don't think we can go wrong with any pick this year, man. I really don't. Obviously we're not gonna get a quarterback first round, but anything else, I wouldn't be mad at it. Free agency wise, looking at the free agency list so far, now I'm sure it's gonna be some cap casualties of some guys let go. That you're going to be like, wow, I wish we could get him. But looking at who's out there now or projected to be out there now, Vontae Davis, Talib, we could probably Dominique Rogers-Cromartie, there's some guys out there that intrigue me that I wouldn't mind taking a chance on. They probably won't cost, you know, they probably won't break the bank either. You know, some of these guys are, you know, they're above average guys. They're not elite guys, but, you know, they'll be better in an upgrade over what we've had the last couple of seasons. There'd be a nice, you know, I'd love to have a Vontae Davis paired up with Prince. You know, we're going to have, what, about $20 million or so in
yeah, 25 or so.
Money.
Yep.
Something like that. And that's just, you know, we may even have more. I'm hearing of Entrell and Eli get extended. So we don't know what Reese is going to do with those guys. But with the money we got, you know, sign Beason and then some great cornerbacks in free agency, man. I hate to not least poke around those guys. I'm sure Jerry Reese will. And, you know, if we can knock a couple of those positions out before the draft even comes, you know, maybe we can get a left tackle or, you know. And trust me, man, I was a guy, personally, I didn't like drafting an O-lineman. It wasn't sexy. I didn't like the Q pick last year. But seeing this year what we went through this year with the Giants, man, I got a new appreciation for the O-line.
Yeah.
And, man, I never thought I would say that, you know. But if we went left tackle and O-guard in first, second round, I would be happy. I would be ecstatic because I never knew the O-line meant that much to an offense. I mean, man, it really is really imperative to keep that quarterback upright and, you know, make sure he has time to do what he can do and running the ball. I mean, man, I mean, I, you know, so we went O-line, I wouldn't be mad about that. And that's weird coming from me because, I, you know, I like the wide receivers and the flashy picks, but we went O-line, John, I'll tell you, man, I'd be doing cartwheels.
Charles, thanks for the call, bud.
Thank you.
Got to roll, man. Thanks for the call, Charles. And how about that? See, this is what I like. Much like coaches have to watch and learn, fans do too. And Charles, self-admitting, like the flashier picks, now all of a sudden sees the value of the offensive line. You live and you learn. I like it. By the way, the cornerback he was referring to, I think it's Darquez. That's, I'm guessing, the pronunciation of it. Darquez Dennard out of Michigan State in Kuiper's first draft. He has him going 24th to the Bengals. He has the Giants taking a number 12, C.J. Mosley, and he thinks that's a good fit there. He has Mack and Barr going in the top 10 at 6-7 to the Falcons and to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He has Johnny Manziel, by the way, going number 1 to the Houston Texans. And a lot of people have concerns about Manziel. I've watched him play. I think he can play in the NFL. I really do. But look, they have the perfect guy. Bill O'Brien was just in college football. He's seen these guys. He knows who can play. He knows who can. He's a quarterback's guy. If there's anybody I trust to pick my quarterback this year in the draft, it's Bill O'Brien. I think that's one of the things that gave the Seahawks such an advantage in their drafts over the last few years, having Pete Carroll, a guy that recruited these players, watched them a lot in college, drafting these guys on defense. That's how you get all these mid-round draft picks that you know can play. Because Pete Carroll, I think, gave an advantage, and I think they'd be wise to take Bill O'Brien's advice on who they should take. They got Jake Matthews, offensive tackle, going number 2. Jadeveon Clowney going to the Jacksonville Jaguars at number 3. Surprising. They don't have him taking a quarterback there, huh? Can the Jaguars really go another year and not try to get their franchise quarterback when you got guys like Blake Bortles and Teddy Bridgewater around? I mean, ugh. I mean, the Texans, to me, got to pick a quarterback. I think the Rams can stick with Bradford for one more year, maybe renegotiate that contract number down a little bit. But to me, the Jaguars and the Browns, they got to take quarterbacks at 4-5, 3-4, don't they? I mean, don't you have to? And then the Raiders at 5, I know people like Terrell Pryor. I'm not buying it. Only the most dyed-in-the-wool Ohio State fans could ever think Terrell Pryor could make it in the league. It's crazy people. I think those Buckeye fans are pretty loyal. Through hell and high water. No matter who the player is, they'll support him. 201-939-4513. Dave is in Rochester. Dave, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, buddy. Hey, quickly, I thought it was interesting just from yesterday's show to today's show about Giants fans, I think, even were a little skeptical about McAdoo. It seemed like fans are kind of worried about his age and him his ability to make the play calling. Just from today, how things have maybe changed, seems to be a little more upbeat, people into it a little bit more. I just want to get your thoughts.
Yeah, you know what? I think what fans will do, they'll hear a name, they'll get nervous, they'll pick out the stuff they don't like, then they'll read all the positive articles about it, and they'll get used to it. I think that happens in a lot of sports when you have free agent signings or trades. They might not like it initially, but then, look, fans are fans. They want the team to succeed, Dave. So they're going to find the bright side to look on. They're going to find things to like now. That doesn't mean they're not going to turn on a screw as soon as something goes bad and they're going to hate the guy again. But I think Giant fans are wise to be optimistic considering what he's done, the system he's coming from, and the type of changes he'll implement in this offense.
Exactly. And I think today's interview helped a little bit to maybe shed a little more light on it. But all right, bro. Thanks a lot. I'll talk to you.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Hey, I learned a lot from Mike Spofford. I hope you guys did too. I thought he was great. I learned a lot in that spot. I really did. This will be archived, by the way, on Podcasted for you guys to check it out. You can download it on iTunes. You can check out the archive on Giants.com. Everybody, thanks for joining us today on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Tomorrow, Lance Meadow will join us. He was going to be with us today, but Mike Spofford said, I don't want to talk to Lance. I just want to talk to John. So I told Lance, you can't come in. Sorry. Okay, Lance has better things to do. Hopefully he's been resting the vocal cords the last few days, and he'll be ready to go tomorrow on Giants.com. We'll do a little preview of the games over the weekend, too. That should be a lot of fun. Should be two fantastic games, Niners and Seahawks, Packers and Broncos. You know my favorite thing about this weekend is, no matter who makes it, the Super Bowl is going to be awesome. So it's not one of those, and the game I always go back to and think about, it was either 98 or 99. I don't remember which season it was. And the Vikings were playing the Falcons in the NFC Championship game. And you knew the winner was going to take on the Denver Broncos. And you knew if the Falcons made it, the game was going to stink. And the Falcons actually gave the Broncos a decent run in that game if Chris Chandler didn't throw a couple of interceptions late in the game. And one was on a tip pass, if memory serves. But I wanted nothing more than to see the Vikings play the Denver Broncos in that damn Super Bowl. To see Culpepper and Moss and Chris Carter. Jake Reed, I think, was still on that team. Robert Smith. The end of John Randall's career. And see that team go up against the Denver Broncos, who had beaten the Packers in the Super Bowl the year prior. With Elway, Terrell Davis, Eddie McCaffrey, Rod Smith, all those guys. I would have loved to see the Vikings play the Broncos, and I was so mad when Gary Anderson missed that field goal. Was it Gary or Morton? It was Gary, right? Ugh. I know Salomon was even more upset than I was, but it's good to know that there's no pressure on Sunday, that a certain team has to win in order to get a fantastic Super Bowl. It really is. I'm thrilled about that. So, it should be a great day of football. We'll talk about that tomorrow. More on Mr. McAdoo, more on the Giants coaches' changes. Lance Meadow will be here. Have a great day. We'll see you tomorrow at 9:30 on Giants.com. Everybody, have a great one.